The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
Nobody has more respect for women than I do. Nobody.
Hillary Clinton wants to abolish it. Believe me. She wants to abolish our Second Amendment.
I think they didn't deny it. I don't think anybody denied it.
Other presidents did not call. They'd write letters, and some presidents didn't do anything.
Many people have come out and said I'm right.
You really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop?
Hello, and welcome to another one. Of our new examples of old fallacies series that we thought we'd do because we're never going to get to these in the normal course of events unless we live, but frankly, far beyond our realistic life expectancy.
So, it's either new examples of existing fallacies, or as one of our listeners delightfully called it, Mark and Jim Unplugged.
Yep.
Well, actually, I think I said Jim and Mark. I've just put myself first there.
Fair enough. That's all right. I'll allow it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Jim and Mark Unplugged. Actually, it rolls better off the tongue. Yeah, so that's... I think it refers to the fact that sometimes we don't necessarily stick to the subject matter.
I mean, do we? I think
do
that's...
We don't.
I think, no,
we don't
I think it's fair off. To say there's the odd tangent. It has taken longer to get through these examples than I expected when we first started doing these. And part of that is our tendency to get distracted by other things.
Oh, no, I think what we're doing is, so I like to kind of magnanimously describe it as bringing examples from our lived experience bear upon the
We're adding example. Texture. That's what we're doing.
Texture. Yeah. Nice. Whether the examples we bring do actually have any relevance whatsoever. But, you know, it seems, yes, it kind of, you know, I quite like the unplugged idea. Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes me feel like a, not that I don't play an acoustic instrument anyway in my other existence as a.
That's true.
Yeah. So I'm the acoustic
Whereas I'm
one.
Purely vocals. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
I did learn the saxophone for like 6 months.
Did you?
I didn't get very far. Yeah.
Wow. I wanted to learn the saxophone, but the school didn't have one. So I did learn the clarinet on the basis that it was much the same thing and it came in a smaller box.
I wanted to, but it was hard. So I gave up because... I have no willpower or musical ability.
But if someone thrust a saxophone in your hands, you could get a note out of it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, a note. I wouldn't guarantee which note.
No, that's not important. That's jazz. That's jazz.
40 years ago, I could play Three Blind Mice.
Nice. Yeah.
That's about it. I learned like 3 or 4 songs and that was it. I just had no... stick-to-itiveness at all. I was just instantly bored because I couldn't do it brilliantly immediately.
I think I could play the Death March of Queen Mary
on a clarinet,
which goes on a clarinet. Yeah, that one. Could play that. I can remember going to my grandparents and said, "Well, I could play that." And my dad went, "No, don't play that." Because it's kind of like the Death March.
And
I think he was a bit aware that they were aging. The other thing I could play was Beethoven's Ninth. You know,
Ode to Joy.
The Glorious Night. The Ode to Joy. Yeah.
My favourite.
Fab. It's dead easy because it's just, I think it's five notes. You don't even have to use the other hand.
See, I kind of wanted to do, I wanted to be able to immediately play proper kind of jazz standards on the saxophone.
Yeah, yeah.
And
you wanted
and
to be Stan Getz.
There's
Jim
a whole
Getz
learning process you that you have to do. And I wasn't up for that at all.
Yeah. No. Yeah. No. Scales and think, no. That's why I'm in a punk band. Because the whole basis of being in a punk band is just have a go at it. It doesn't matter.
Dissonance is fine.
Yeah, let's just do it. It's fine. But, we kind of gloss over the fact that the guitarist and the bass player are terribly good musicians that have an encyclopedic knowledge of how things should go. And then I just crash in and go, and I play that bit and then go to that bit. And they go, you can't. Because I'm in the wrong place, and that will we'll do it. Just do it, and then they do it, and it works. Well, to my ear,
I did learn on the guitar. I did learn. I saw three ships come sailing in.
Oh, what?
And also the Mork and Mindy theme tune.
Wow,
those are the two things I could play on the guitar. and I could do My Darling Clementine on the mouth organ.
Really?
Yeah, this, again, 40 years ago, I couldn't have a hope of any of it these days, but that was it. I'd pick up an instrument, I'd learn one piece of music on it and then give up completely forever.
Yeah.
That was my childhood.
Oh, that's it, I've mastered that one. Give me another instrument.
Don't need to keep doing that.
Because I've done that tune. Yeah. Wow. Uh-huh. I did once pick up, dating somebody in the, what was it, late 80s, and she had a saxophone, so I borrowed it, and then I recorded something on a 4-track cassette player. Sounded quite good, because I've no idea what it was, but you chuck it through enough effects, sounds great. So I think she was quite jealous. Once you've got the embouchure worked out, you could just play any reed instrument.
Absolutely.
Reed Richards, anything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mr. Incredible.
So.
No, he wasn't Mr. Incredible.
Speaking of tangents.
Yeah.
Our there you first.
Go. How did we get there? Yeah.
It was from the Unplugged comment. Yeah. Took us straight to music. So, the first fallacy that we're talking about this time is the worst case scenario fallacy, which was episode 135.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what happens when someone argues as if the worst thing that could possibly happen is actually the most likely thing.
Mm.
And our example for this one is from Peep Show.
Okay, wow, this is it, the ultimate. I'm in a relationship with someone I really like. Something's obviously going to have to go wrong. I wonder what it's going to be. It's almost definitely going to be something I do. I need to watch myself like a hawk.
I mean, to be fair, Mark here is working off some quite significant history of his relationships going down this exact route.
He's quite self-aware.
So it's not purely based on fear of the future, rather than just kind of what everything's gone like for him so far.
It's kind of almost a variation of the slippery slope as well, but without all the intervening steps.
Sure.
You kind of get to... from here to where the slippery slope ends up, and you miss out all the
Yeah, you don't need an inciting incident at all. It's just things are definitely going to go very, very badly.
Yeah, yeah.
And whatever I can think of as a person who catastrophizes is going to be what inevitably happens. Yeah. And of course, this kind of thinking can be self-fulfilling.
Right.
There are certain circumstances where if you are convinced that everything is going to go terribly wrong, then you probably won't do the things that would be required to make it not do that. And you may treat a situation like a relationship, for example, with less respect than it deserves and end up making that happen in the end.
Yeah.
So,
it's a bit like that. Is that sort of self-help mindfulness meme, which is if you believe you can't, then you're right.
Yes.
so it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah. So our next example is the straw man fallacy, which was both episode 2 and also episode 139, because this is, I think, this is the first one we've done, we're doing here, where we've already re-looked at it.
Right. Yeah. And yet, people have not learned to do it.
Since,
despite all our hard work.
Since the second time we looked at this, more stuff has happened.
Right.
Or I've come across more examples. And there'll be a few of these. We'll keep going back to ones that we've already looked at more than once. So, as we've discussed more than once, the straw man fallacy is it's one of the best known fallacies, frankly. In fact, I'm wearing my straw man fallacy t-shirt right now.
There you go.
It is when someone misrepresents their opponent's argument to make it easier to defeat. So they put words into someone's mouth suggesting that the claim that their opponent is making is one that is just kind of trivial to beat. And that can make it look to observers like they have then won that argument if they're able to defeat the more easily defeated version.
Yeah.
Which might be a kind of a distortion of the person's argument, or it might just be something completely made up that the person never said. So our example here is a political one. From the debate between Tudor Dixon and Gretchen Whitmer.
Last week, the CDC recommended adding COVID-19 vaccines to the recommended immunization schedule for both children and adults next year. Got to be very adamant about this. This is not a mandate. This was a recommendation. This happens every single year. So as governor of Michigan, do you take them up on that recommendation and make sure that the COVID-19 vaccination be required for school attendance, Mrs. Dixon?
Yeah, I want to be very clear about this. This is a parent's decision. There will never be a mandate for the COVID-19 vaccine for children to go to school in a Dixon administration. I'm anxious to hear what Gretchen Whitmer has to say because she was forcing the vaccine on people. You remember her program, Vax to Normal? You could only get your liberties and freedoms back if you got your neighbor vaccinated. She will likely push this on your children.
That's a claim by Tudor Dixon about Gretchen Whitmer, who is the incumbent governor. And she's making a direct claim. She's saying that her program, Vax to Normal, you could only get your liberties and freedoms back if you got your neighbour vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
That's not true. It does sound like a crazy system because it's requiring people to impose their will on their neighbours, people who they have no actual control over, in order to be able to do anything, in order to get out and about or, you know, whatever the freedoms that they might enjoy if those rules are followed. That's not what the Vax to Normal plan was at all.
Actually
what
was.
Was it set milestones for reopening parts of Michigan, essentially, businesses, restaurants, etc., based on the number of Michigan residents, 16 or older, who had the first dose of the COVID vaccine.
Oh, okay.
So when you put it like that, when you say, yes, once we have reached a certain level of vaccination among the adult population of Michigan,
then we can open some of
the
facilities.
We will be able
facilities.
To
yeah.
loosen the restrictions that are currently in place on people being able to go out in public and, you know, go to restaurants and go to shops and stuff like that. When you put it like that, it's a completely fucking reasonable thing to say.
Yeah.
That, yes, of course, you can loosen restrictions if you have safety in place by a system like vaccination reaching enough people. The goal wasn't even for everyone to get vaccinated.
Yeah.
It was 70% of vaccinations. 70% of adult Michiganders needed to be vaccinated in order to remove all the remaining COVID-19 restrictions.
Wow.
So that's like not even that strong.
So it was just, and that was just a matter of counting the numbers. But it was just kind of keeping an eye on
how
many people had been vaccinated. And at which point, that once that threshold had been reached, you could make access available to public facilities, whether they're restaurants or or you know, libraries or whatever. Yeah. It's such a right-wing thing to do to turn it around the other way, isn't it?
Yeah. But if everyone had managed to convince their neighbours to get vaccinated, they would have reached that threshold way faster.
Mm-hmm.
But each person's individual liberties had no connection at all to whether they had put any effort whatsoever into convincing other people to get vaccinated, which is the claim that Tudor Dixon was making, and then suggesting further that that would then be imposed on children, which was never a factor. It was always about getting adults vaccinated, and that was where the threshold was. So, yeah, she turned it into a thing that a lot of people would have an issue with. If your personal liberties were restricted because you didn't enforce your views or even the government's views on other individuals, that's a crazy thing that a lot of people would have a problem with. But the reality was not that.
Wow. I watched yesterday the Weird Al Yankovic movie, and there's one bit where they talk about you've got to make a hay boy. So, which is because the whole of the movie is about I want to write words for existing songs. No, there's no market for that. It turns out there is, and so they come up with. So he sneaks out of the house, and they say, "Well, what you have to do," and his friends on the bus going to school say, "What you have to do is you have to make a hay boy." He's going, "What? Oh, yeah, you make a hay boy," and it's obviously the straw man. And then later on, there's one that gets set up, and there's a callback to that. But so even to Al Yankovic is rewriting the fallacies. So he's calling this the hay boy fallacy. Yeah, there we go.
So our next fallacy is Schrodinger's douchebag, which was episode 142. And this is where someone says a thing that is generally unacceptable, whether it's just plain wrong or bigoted or mean. Then when they're called on it and it's pointed out that the thing they said was wrong or it's unacceptable to say that, they say they were just joking. If they hadn't been called out on it, they appear to be serious about it. But they have the opportunity to claim plausible deniability by pretending that actually no, they were just being sarcastic or they were joking, because that means they don't have to take responsibility for being such a douchebag.
Yeah, and the way that Trump voices that stuff, there's no way. It just indicates yet again that the right doesn't know how humor works, because when they say, "Oh, I was just being ironic or sarcastic or humorous or making a joke," said, "No, that's not how jokes work. That it's just you can't. There's no way what you said could be interpreted in any way that would make it funny. So you're just, the result." As soon as somebody points something out, that's where you say, "Oh no, the cat is dead," or "there was never a cat at all," or in Schrodinger's.
It weirdly, in right wingers' defense, the fact that the things they say when they are trying to be funny aren't funny,
right,
kind of plays into this as a benefit for them. Because the arsehole-ish things they say, which weren't intended as jokes, are about as funny as the things they intended to be funny.
As jokes, yeah, true.
Yeah, and if you watch people like Greg Gutfeld trying to be funny on the Five or whatever the Fox fucking thing is, then he's never, ever funny. And so when he says a thing that is horrendously racist, it's completely plausible that he thinks it's hilarious.
Right. So. So and he can just say, "Oh, you guys can't take
it." It's hard to tell the difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. In this case, though, it is Trump who is our example. And it comes from his claim before he got elected that he would be able to stop the war between Russia and Ukraine within 24 hours.
Aha.
I'm not understating the complexity of all this, but as a candidate, you said you would have this war settled in 24 hours.
Well, I was being a little bit sarcastic when I said that. I would. What I really mean is I'd like to get it settled. And I think I'll be successful.
As is often the case with this fallacy,
yeah,
the idea of joking about this thing is almost as bad as
right.
if he just accepted that the thing he said. Like, the
yeah.
being sarcastic about stopping a war would be already a douchebag thing to do.
Exactly! Such an
It doesn't make you look better.
To say, oh, I yeah. meant to. No. Yeah.
I was just trying to make people laugh. It does. It's
yeah.
not.
Oh, so, yeah.
It doesn't make it better.
Being sarcastic.
You'd have it's to, not true, being, obviously.
And if you were being sarcastic, you'd have to sound sarcastic. You'd have to say it like, you know, oh yeah, I could finish the war in 24 hours. Something like that. You've got to be clearly using yes. sarcasm. Yeah. Yeah.
It's not. It would be a super weird thing to say in a sarcastic way.
Oh, quite!
But,
yes!
Like, what he means, I think, if I'm being charitable, is he was exaggerating for effect.
Right.
Because that is a thing he
yes.
does. The hyperbolic fallacy is another
All
one.
All the bloody
discussed.
Time, yes. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I say that's a thing he does. I'm under hyperbolizing there, because, yeah. yes, it is yeah. insane. Yeah. The extent to yeah. which he is not only, you know, a great president, but the best president ever. He's not just yeah. like got a
history.
Good economy, but yeah. the best economy the world has ever seen. It's yeah. always yeah. something like that. And so when it is the case, I was going to say it's plausible, but it's actually completely what was happening, was that yeah. he was saying, I'll get it finished within 24 hours.
Yeah.
Because... if you're the best negotiator in the world ever, yeah, you'd probably be able mm-hmm. to do that. And he thinks he is.
Yeah.
And he portrays that to the world.
And therefore it makes him a much more attractive candidate if
yeah.
that's...
Yeah.
I think nobody's ever disabused him of the position that he's put himself in. You know, even when he was in doing the real estate thing, failing at the real estate
stuff. I disagree.
Everybody... boosted him. Do you think he knows that he can't
I think many, many people. I think people throughout his entire life have disabused him of that notion, but he has never listened to another human.
He
just doesn't give a shit what other
right.
people think or say.
Because
yeah. he's the most incredible narcissist the world has ever seen. He is a 4-month-old baby where nothing else exists in the world except
yeah.
him.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. The other people
far as the
are
terrible
playthings
twos even.
For his yeah. enjoyment, and none of them matter. Their opinions don't matter. Nothing they could ever say or think or hope for or dream matters to him whatsoever. So it doesn't matter
yeah.
how many times people tell him he's wrong or that he's being an idiot or that he's hurting people. None of it matters at all.
But don't you think that came from somewhere? You know, it came from the likes of Fred Senior, saying, "Yeah, you're fine, you'll be great," and that it was all about Trump wanting to do stuff for his dad and to please his dad, and his dad not ever giving a shit about what Trump did, what Donald did, but and used him to the hilt to further the Trump brand. So he didn't really. So he bailed out.
That, yes,
Donnie,
Fred
in,
didn't
in all
help.
Cases. Yeah.
Fred absolutely made it worse. But
yeah.
I think it's something inherent in Donald. I think it's like Boris
right.
with his.
Yeah. Yeah.
As a child, how old was he when he reckoned he should have won that piano competition despite not actually being able to play the piano?
Yeah. Well, I think he was in his teens or something. Yeah.
That's the kind of insane narcissism that these people have.
And at least we admit it can't play an instrument.
It comes from ridiculous privilege and never actually having to try at anything, because it doesn't matter how poorly you do at those things, you're still a success in your own mind.
Yes, and you'll still end up going to Eton.
But Trump was we know from the Mary Trump book and from lots of things that we've read, that he was already a complete arsehole by the time he went to military academy. I mean, that's essentially why he was sent to military academy, was because because he was such a dick to everyone at his school. Everyone hated him. Yeah, because that's how he was as a child, and nothing that happened to him as a child. Certainly, his parents didn't parent him in a way that stopped that from being his approach to the world.
Yeah, yeah.
Whether anything could have been done to stop it, who knows? Because it doesn't seem like anyone ever tried.
Yeah,
or at least not until he was older.
Because I think that there's a notion that you would grow out of it, you know, that you kind of, it's the terrible twos, or the that moment when you're in between two and four, when you start realizing that the world doesn't revolve around you. You know, when you're hungry, the rest of the world isn't hungry. So sometimes you have to wait for other people. And eventually you grow out of it. You individuate, as it were, and you become. But I think you don't grow out of it. What it is you're parented out of it. And he never was. It was just entertained, tolerated, encouraged. He was never. Is he the youngest of the lot? Or was he the last but one? Because Fred Jr. was younger than him. No,
Fred's
older. No, he wasn't. But he was the kind of the golden boy. He was the blue-eyed boy, and Fred was disappointed in Fred Jr. So all of the empire was, going to be settled on Donnie. So he was kind of tolerated and used, and then Fred Sr. actually saw the advantage of having somebody who thought they could do no wrong, and the amount of attendant bravado.
I think that's the thing. I think the directionality is difficult to determine, because I don't know that the ridiculous overconfidence came from the expectation that he would be the heir to the business. I think it was the other way around. I think he was already a massive dick way before there was that concept of who would take over. Because certainly Fred was being groomed to take over, and it didn't. It can't have been until he was in the office and unable to do or unwilling to do the stuff that Fred Sr. would do that it became clear he wasn't going to be the one to take over. I think that's the point at which Fred Sr. was like, oh, this, you're a disappointment to me. I think before that, he was being groomed to be put in that position. And Donald's complete lack of self-awareness of his own flaws made him the ideal front man for that organization moving forward. And Fred could continue to run stuff behind the scenes, and Donald could get them publicity and all that kind of stuff. And then when it was about actually taking over the day-to-day running of it, Fred, I guess, valued that enough to support it and bail him out when he made constant fuck ups.
Yeah.
But I don't feel like, from what we've read, that it was the promise of that being his future that led to his
being
absolute,
an ass.
Convincing himself that he was able to do that. I think,
right.
I think, because sometimes when parents spoil their kids, when they attend to their every whim and don't give them boundaries and threaten them and then don't follow through on threats and stuff like that, you see those kids being assholes, and they're going to grow up to be assholes, and they probably, in many cases, will learn from having no friends and getting rejected by everyone as they become teens and adults.
Right.
Maybe to temper some of that behavior. I don't feel like Donald was spoiled in that way. He was obviously ridiculously privileged.
Yeah.
But he wasn't fawned over by his parents. His parents, for as far as we can tell, were completely just, they ignored him. He wasn't.
Yeah.
He was given essentially free rein. I don't think he was probably ever punished for anything, but he wasn't given attention by them, it seems.
Yeah.
So he didn't learn it that way. Maybe the only way he did get attention was by being the asshole. I don't know.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it is difficult to know how much of it is built into him and how much was his upbringing. But I mean, it is amazing the effect that whatever it was had, because it is bulletproof. His confidence in himself. His belief that he is special. There's absolutely nothing that can be done about it. And nor has there been, I think, for decades at least.
No.
Doesn't matter what anyone says. He is absolutely convinced he's the best.
Exactly. He kind of bends space-time around him sufficient to change the truth. He changes the facts in order to uphold his version of his story about himself. Sufficient to be able to say, yes, I'll stop the war in 24 hours. And then he'll just say, oh, no, I was being somewhat sarcastic. And you weren't. But he can't entertain the idea of not being able to do stuff. So he'll just say, when I said that, I was just making a joke. And it's your fault that you couldn't see that joke.
I mean, the thing is, almost everyone could see that. Not that it was a joke.
Yeah.
But that he not only wouldn't be able to do it, but had no concept of what would be required to get anywhere near achieving it. Like that he is such an incompetent that he isn't in the same league as people who could start to formulate a plan of what might be needed to negotiate something like that. It's not that he had a secret plan that he just wasn't telling people.
Yeah.
And when he said, I can stop it in 24 hours. Obviously, I'm not going to tell Biden how to do that because that would make him look good. So I will just wait until I'm in office and then I'll do it. It was never that, obviously. No. And I don't know how many of his followers believed that was what was going to happen. I think even a good chunk of his followers recognized that he was just boasting and blustering and it wouldn't actually be able to
to have, he's got no sense of what's required diplomatically or otherwise.
I think most of them probably thought he would be able to negotiate an end to it. Maybe I'm over giving them too much credit, but I don't think a lot of them probably believed it could be done that quickly.
Right.
But anyone who's paid the slightest attention over the last 8 years knew that he just didn't have the beginning of a clue.
Yeah.
And it wasn't serious. And he wasn't being serious when he said it.
No.
But when you say that as the reason why people should elect you to the arguably the highest office in the world.
Yeah.
I don't think it's unreasonable to be asked the question.
Yeah. Well, when you said that, exactly. Well, it's the same thing as when he was faced with the numbers by the Australian interviewer.
Yep.
When he's faced with
people. We'll be hearing from a bit later, perhaps the next episode.
when he's faced with people outside of the sycophancy, outside of the circle that maintained that the emperor is fully dressed, when there's people outside who just simply say to him, or a bit like the recent guy said that when Trump was saying, oh yeah, well he had, you know, M13 tattooed on his knuckles, and the other guy said, no, he didn't, it's photoshopped, And Trump just kept going on about it because he couldn't believe that somebody either was unaware of what he was aware of or would contradict him, because he's so convinced in his rightness and his righteousness from his position, even though he's made it up. He's lied about it.
Well,
he's convinced that he's in that case.
I don't think that he's made it up. I think it's just that he is fully stupid enough to have believed
that the clearly photoshopped
MS-13 was in fact a tattoo.
But it suits his narrative. You know, like it's a, yes, I can stop. I can stop the war. Of course, good. I could do that. I could stop the war. I could do that. And. Yeah. If you were anyone other than a candidate for the president's job, people would say to you, okay, how would you do that? Or rather, if you were anyone other than a Republican candidate for the president's job.
No, absolutely. Yeah, call me crazy, because I still feel like that's a question people should have asked him at the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
given the position that he was in. I think it's reasonable to ask that question.
Yeah, no, absolutely, yeah.
And yet it didn't seem to come up.
Yep, I mean, yeah. And then, when it does come up, he will just shut down the questioning by saying, you're mean and horrid, what a horrible, mean and horrible and second-rate and all that kind of stuff, you know, shoot the messenger. And fucking Farage does the same thing. Boris didn't quite get there, but Farage is unashamedly doing it. And people are saying, oh, yeah, Farage, he's following Trump. And Trump has made a great success, you know, of America. No, he's made a great success of being a professional lying piece of shit. And, you know, Farage is just following
the
paper. The
hugest.
Yeah, huge success. Yeah. Because people buy into the fact that he is wearing clothes. They buy into the lie that the emperor is fully enrobed, because it's come from way back in the real estate era when people were lending money on the basis of his name, and they had to put more money behind that and say that they believed he would be successful in order to get their money back. The 80s being what it was. You know,
because otherwise they'd look like idiots for investing in an obvious
in grifter. A non-entity. Yeah, having been found out that they'd invested in a bubble. You know, that was the whole thing of the .com bubble, or the NFT bubble,
the housing bubble.
Yep. People with Damien Hirst's art, that people would buy into this stuff.
The Hirst bubble.
The Hirst bubble and the inevitable Emin bubble. Yeah. And the unmade screenplay One Saliva bubble by David Lynch. But people would invest in this stuff. And invest, they are fully invested, not just money, but they've got to go through with it, hold their nose against the stench of lies and corruption in order to see their money repaid. And yet, after countless decades of not being repaid, not being paid, let alone repaid, people still support Trump. And the people that have been worse than dog shit under his foot have voted him in their millions. Because what is this messianic thing? Is it fundamentally that he's legitimizing racism and abuse of non-white people and non-cis people, and is a non-het people? Is it simply that he's militarized, he's weaponized the fundamental haters of other people because there are still people that will call up and, you know, speak to the equivalent of James O'Brien. And despite the fact that all of their beliefs and assumptions have been, and conspiracy theories have been debunked, we'll still go away believing that Trump is fine. Because there's some sort of messianic thing. It's not, no, that's not right, because, you know, the he's not the Messiah. Because the idea of a Messiah is that it's about coming up with an idea that everybody is great and we ought to treat everybody equal. That was, you know, the last Messiah, and I've followed a few. But Trump has this messianic appeal because he's just legitimized the dark end of what used to live in the forums off the edges of the internet. As the troller in chief, he's legitimized all of that. So there's these people saying, finally, we've got our country back. We've got our First Amendment right back. We can be completely abusive to absolutely anybody, because look at Trump. He does it all the time, and he's making a virtue of it. Sufficient to so when he's called out on something, he will just say, "Oh, I'm just having a laugh, and you're stupid for not knowing that." And then everybody will stand behind him and applaud and say, "Yes, leader, you're quite right."
The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
So our next fallacy is moral equivalence, which was episode 3, and also we took another look at it on episode 137. And this is when someone argues that the actions of two people, normally their opponent and a bad person, are morally equivalent, that one is just as bad as the other,
right?
And usually it's to suggest that the action of their opponent is really bad because they're comparing it and saying it's the same as a usually far worse, objectively worse action.
Yeah.
And in this case, this is a clip from MacGyver, the non-heretical update, but reboot of MacGyver. I think this is 2016 series.
Right.
In this episode, MacGyver and his team have been after someone who is trying to kill a particular individual, and they catch up with him just before he pulls a trigger.
Mm-hmm. All this planning, all these years, my life. I couldn't let it all be for nothing.
And it won't be. We will take him in, but if you kill him in front of his family, his kids, then you really will become the same monster that he is.
So this is a little unfair on MacGyver's part, because the guy that they are chasing and stopping from committing murder is an individual whose family was killed in a either a robbery or a staged robbery by a minion of this crime lord, who is the kind of the head of international organized crime across Europe, who has done very, very bad things and killed a lot of people. And in this staged robbery, this individual's wife and child were killed. So he has nothing in his life, and all he wants is revenge, essentially, which is kind of understandable. I don't think it's fair to say that if he takes revenge on the international crime lord, he's just as bad
he
as
would be just as the one bad who as him.
Ruined right. literally hundreds of lives and killed hundreds of people. Those aren't yep. equivalent.
Yeah.
I'm not advocating, I should say, just in case. I want to be clear. I'm not advocating murder, even in a revenge circumstance.
Right.
But
yeah.
I do think that there is a difference morally in in taking that revenge, if it were to happen, than there is in building a crime empire for yourself off the backs of many deaths.
Right. Bit like Trump, really.
Don't know. Maybe it's subjective.
Yeah. 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 But there was a phrase, and I don't know where it came from, but there was a phrase that kind of developed between my brother and I and friends when we were either building something, like literally building a recording studio, or we were in a band or something, and something would happen and you would point to somebody else in an accusing manner and say, well, you're just as bloody worse. So it's that yep. kind of, it was a sort of a whataboutism and a bit of an ad hominem, but also a moral equivalence in the, but properly.
A two-quoque, so, a little bit of two-quoque.
Yeah, two-quoque, yeah. But yeah. properly sarcastic in that you're just as bloody worse, you know, because it's bad English. And it would acknowledge the fact that somebody pointed out.
Didn't it come from your mum?
Oh, it may well have done.
Wasn't it? I think you may have mentioned before to
right.
me that it was something your mum had said and you and your brother just came around with it and took it on
as an attack on each other. It sounds like a malapropism, a mum-apropism. Yeah, I think you could be right. Well, there you go. Yeah, because I think there's part of it is in coming back with a somewhat humorous response, you're taking on the chin the fact that you've done something wrong, but you're also and you're desperate to lay some blame on somebody else, but you're doing it in such a way that acknowledges that you're making a false equivalence, a false moral equivalence. Yeah, see, that's Trump is the proper use of sarcasm and litotes and bathos. Not that you'd know about that, you douchebag.
So next up is the pragmatic fallacy. Mm-hmm. We looked at this in episode 149. This is where someone argues that a course of action is the correct one because it works,
right,
regardless of whether it actually is the optimal course or whether there might be also disadvantages with doing that. And the first example is from Mean Girls. This is, again, the non-heretical musical. Ah.
You pretended to be dumb so you could keep talking to a guy? It worked. Because that shit always works, Caddy. It doesn't mean that it's not evil. Fracking works. Redlining works. Gasoline in red!
Yeah. Janice is quite clear there that there are other things that also work.
Yeah. But
maybe doesn't mean that that should be the
course of action we should adopt.
The criteria as to whether that makes it an okay thing to do. Gasoline and rags work.
Or the two thin Christs balance out the fat one. Yeah. It works, mate.
Katie is making the argument because, I mean, she doesn't have a huge amount of experience in relationships. This is literally her first one, really. And she was struggling to kind of talk to the cute boy in her math class and found that one way that she could get him to talk to her is to pretend that she needed help with her math. So she's defending it on that basis. And it's not seen as a positive step. So another example in this fallacy is from an episode of Taskmaster.
Hey!
Little side question. Mm-hmm. Have you got sanitary towels in your shoes?
It's a long story. Yes. they stop you getting blisters.
Oh, man, you're so weird, Alex. I've worked with you for so long, and you're so weird.
Get better shoes.
Get insoles. Can you get, like, insoles that you buy?
Hello, plasters.
Yeah.
Hello.
Blister plasters.
Hello, everyone.
Why sanitary taps?
It works.
Oh,
I think, honestly, don't knock it till you've tried it.
So, actually, I think this is from an outtake from season 19, I want to say, of Taskmaster. This didn't actually make it into an episode, but, yeah, it was pointed out that Alex Horn wears sanitary towels in his shoes as in place of insoles. And obviously, understandably, everyone else in the room thinks it's super weird. And why would you do that? And
yeah,
his argument is it works. Now, the fact it works, in his opinion, to stop you getting blisters or to, you know, comfort or whatever, doesn't mean it's the best thing you could use for that. There may be other solutions. One of them suggested insoles.
Insoles and plasters.
They're suggesting other solutions because there are things that are less weird
right
that you could
but
use.
But the only reason that they
that
it's kind of it's just unconventional. It's not what you would normally think to use, but it works. There's a YouTube channel I follow, Vice Grip Garage. This guy goes around America rescuing old 50s, 60s, 70s cars, flies out by having bought it, and then fixes it and drives it hundreds of miles home. And they will do things to it, like, I don't know, put a vice grip on a brake line to stop it pulling to one side, and or something daft. And then he says, but, you know, let's go along on the basis that if it works, is it such a bad idea? And you have to kind of agree with him that it gets him home, so it kind of works. It's just out of the ordinary. And Alex Horn is way out of the ordinary. But it's does remind me of I did look up. So when I was riding my motorbike, and we were talking earlier about MacGyver's poor choice of collarless leather jackets as a and pretending to be a biker, because there's a massive draft under there. And in riding my motorbike, it would get cold. So I've got steel toe cap motorbike boots, but they would get very cold because of the same reason as the wind would blow between your jacket and your helmet as you're going along. So I looked up, you could get heated insoles or heated boots. You put them in your boots and they would heat up your boot, but they were hundreds of pounds. So I made some.
Have you tried thick socks?
Well, doesn't make any difference. You need something to, because it just wicks the heat out of your, and no amount of sockage will keep the heat in if the cold air is blowing past your feet. So, and your feet are moving up and down, so they're always in the draft. So I made some from heating elements that heated up, kind of kept chemistry beakers. So there'd be these tiny little ring. They look like the things that they stick onto items in the supermarket that they don't want you to steal. They've got that little kind of spiral of metal that will set off the alarms. So these things are these little heated spirals that would literally go under.
Little metal coils like attached to a 9-volt battery or something.
Yeah.
Is that what you're doing?
Yes. They were designed to heat up beakers, chemistry. And I kind of emailed these people and said, oh yeah, can you, you know, what's the temperature rise if you put this voltage, if you put a 12-volt battery through it, how hot would it get? And they said, oh, if we get to near boiling point. Okay. So I got those and I made the things and I put insoles in. I'm now thinking I should have put sanitary towels in, but put insoles in, so they're in the bottom of it, but insoles over the top of those, and then ran the wires up my trouser legs, and the top of the Y came out of my waistband, and then that plugged into a plug that came out of the battery.
Dangerous.
And it was pretty, I mean, the only dangerous thing would have been if I came off the bike, which I have done, came off the bike, I would remain attached to the bike, but I put a kind of quick release thing, join from the bike. So the wires were down, were in my trousers, and the thing would kind of come out of my waistband, and then the plug was on the bike, and it would clip together, the quick release thing, and then there was a switch on the handlebars to switch them all off. So were they good. They were toasty. You kind of put them on and they would heat your feet up quite quickly and quite hot, so you have to switch it off again. But they were terribly effective.
Are you aware
that
you can get little chemical sachets?
Right.
That when you kind of scrumple them up,
yeah,
give off heat, have an exothermic reaction for hand warming.
Yeah, and you can put them in your shoes. Yes.
Yeah, of course you can put them in your fucking shoes. Yes. Then you don't need to have wires running up your legs and out your waistband.
However, they're quite expensive, and you'd have to buy one for every trip.
Well, I'm pretty sure you can buy them in bulk.
Right.
They're not that expensive.
Yeah, but once I'd bought all of the elements,
how much did all of that stuff cost you then?
I don't know, 40 quid, something like that. I had the wire. I had the quick release kind of thing because I had one on the lawnmower. So it would, you know, if you went too far, it would quick release from the extension lead. And so the only things really I had to buy were the heating elements. That was it, and the little fuse barrel.
This sounds insane.
It was nuts, but it worked terribly well, and it was four times cheaper.
I tell you what, I would be most concerned by is a failure of the insulation somewhere in the leg area
between the waistband and the
thigh.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, no, because I made sure that it was all insulated like that because the join was outside of my waistband.
Sure.
Yeah.
But you move about a bit when you're riding a motorbike, don't you?
Well, you sat down a lot.
Up and down a little bit.
Well, you sat down a great deal. Yeah, but only from your kind of ankles to your knees, really. That's the most of the hinging goes on there. No, they're very good. If anyone's interested, I can show you the all the elements that
you
I made.
Didn't patent it. This
I felt it wasn't. I think that people had probably
more sense than patented. To do that.
No, well, I know that there was a system, which is a lot less crude. But it was fundamentally the same, and that would have, if I'd have tried to patent it, there would have been a copyright claim, I'm sure. But yeah, I mean, it was fab.
It worked.
I mean, it's a bit chunky. It worked.
Yeah,
worked a treat.
See, I think
absolutely marvellous.
I think the vice grip garage thing, the argument there,
if it works,
yeah,
is it such a bad idea?
There. Philosophy is largely using what you have to get the stuff going, right?
Right.
They're not kind of, you know, sending out for spare parts, waiting a few days to get them in and then getting it all
then installing
fixed
them
properly.
And then going home. Yeah.
They're just like, how can I get this currently non-working thing to work?
They're MacGyvering it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
It's a bit like kind of fixing code. If you're debugging code, for the most part, if you're doing it for yourself, if you're doing it as a job, then you should probably do it properly. But if you're doing it for yourself, for a program you've written or whatever, kludging to make it work however you can make it work is acceptable.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah.
No matter how unpleasant or inelegant your solution is to
right
getting rid of the errors that your poor initial coding has introduced.
If you can
make a fix that gets around it and stops that from causing problems, you've done it.
Yeah.
That's all you need, because you've made the thing you were trying to make happen.
Yeah.
So I think when your philosophy is, let's get this going with the minimum amount of additional work, I think it works, is a fine solution. I think when there are better alternatives that fit within your philosophy of, you know, this is the way we should live as a whole, or
right.
I mean, let's put it this way. I don't think Alex Horn was restricted to only using sanitary pads in his shoes. I think he had access to better solutions or alternative solutions and chose
but we don't know, because it's outside the scope of the edit that we've heard. Yeah.
They don't specify whether he had tried everything else and worked.
Yeah. And they hadn't worked, yeah.
No.
Or, but, you know, like I had tried those crunchy things that kind of chemically...
He's Alex Horn. He thought maybe this will work. And he tried them and they worked. And he was that's it now.
Yes. We kind of, our cognitive bias leads us to believe that's the kind of thing he would do.
Yeah.
He would just go, oh, hang on a minute, that'll work. They're kind of absorbent and quite comfortable because they've got to be.
They're cushioned.
I wonder if they would work. They're,
they're
cushioned and absorbent.
They wick moisture away from your feet, I imagine.
Yeah. Whether he's got ones for nighttime. Do they have wings? All of that stuff. And does it, and as he rides along, does he sing that song? Well, it's not Canada, is it? What's the other one?
Body Farm.
Yeah, yeah.
That one.
Body Farm, yeah. As he's skating, as he's roller skating.
On the beach, being pulled by dogs.
Across the beach. Yeah.
I always thought that was a very bad idea. I mean, apart from the dogs, but like roller skating on a beach, it's fine if the sand is just the right texture. But surely your wheels are going to dig into the sand. Yeah. You're going to fall. I mean, it's not going to hurt too badly because you're on a beach.
I think we're probably concatenating.
Oh, I'm sure.
Several
I'm
images.
Sure.
I think it was probably
one of the women on the was being pulled the along bit, the beach by dogs on
well,
a roller skates.
No, it's probably Muscle Beach, and it's the boardwalk, not the boardwalk, but you know, the pavement.
It was sand.
I'm looking out.
That's what's in my head.
Well, yeah, quite. Yeah. Well, I'm also, it's kind of, it's melding slowly into the Canada advert. Canada! That kind of, and also the crumbliest, flakiest milk chocolate. They're all in there. Yeah.
Well, you look that up. I'll move on to the next fallacy.
Okay.
Which is appeal to confidence, which we looked at in episode 151. This is when someone claims that the reason that something happened is just luck, as opposed to the more likely cause that there is actual evidence for. And our example here is a cold open from Cheers.
What can I get you?
I'm a phone company repairman.
Oh, I'm a bartender, Ernie Pantusa.
Phil Ryan. I got a call to come down here.
Gee, there must be some mistake, Phil. I didn't call for any repairman.
I think Sam put in a call, Coach.
He did? Uh-huh. Gee, that's strange. He didn't say anything to me about it. I better give him a call and find out what this is all about. Bum luck, Phil. Phone's up.
Give him a couple of seconds.
Say, Phil, I hate to impose on you, but since they got you down here on this wild goose chase, would you mind taking a look at the phone?
Sure.
Thank you. Lucky thing you happened by here, huh, Carlos?
Sometimes fate takes a hand, Coach.
Love Coach. He's so great.
Fantastic. So good.
So, I mean, obviously, Coach was believing that the phone company repairman was there just by happenstance.
What a coincidence.
It was a crazy coincidence.
I'll just phone up. But go, oh, no, dumb, let the phone's out.
Yeah.
So good.
He's so good.
Yeah.
Nicholas Colasanto, who played Coach, incidentally, was quite an accomplished TV director as well.
Oh.
He wasn't in that many other shows as an actor other than Coach. He was in a few things, mm-hmm. but he was better known as a director. He directed things like Columbo and lots of other stuff.
Yeah, I was going to say director. Columbo. Yeah, yeah. Mm. Well, by the way, have you seen the man in the room next door? What's his name?
Oh, yes, I have. Yes.
The Columbo. The modern day Columbo. That's so good.
Michael Spicer.
It's absolutely perfect, yes. Isn't it?
Yeah.
In every way. Yeah.
I thought you were going to say, when I mentioned Columbo and you said, oh, have you seen? I thought you were going to say Poker Face, the Natasha Lyonne show, which is very much the modern Columbo.
Right.
It is. It's a great series. It's very clearly modelled on Columbo to the extent that they use the same kind of fonts and stuff like that in the
in
the credits and things. But it is created by Rian Johnson, the guy who did Glass Onion and it is Natasha Lyonne as a kind of nomadic travelling person with the ability to tell when someone is telling a lie, and constantly gets into situations where someone has been killed and there's a mystery to solve, and it's really good.
Cool. Ooh, I'll have to look that up. So I've not yet there.
You haven't found the body form advert with the
no.
On the beach.
There's ones of somebody dancing. There's another one of found it of skydiving.
Sure.
Okay. All right. See. Well. Being pulled by dogs.
Yes.
Who could be out of the Andrix thing, but she's on a kind of boardwalk very near the sea.
Okay.
But the shots are such that there's lots of sand around her, yes.
The sand kind of kicking up because of the dogs, or?
No.
No?
No, okay. They're just on a very narrow kind of concrete,
all right,
concrete boardwalk. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Because, you know, you can't skate on sand.
No, it'd be crazy. Yeah. That was my problem with it.
Yeah.
Well, there we go then. They're on a boardwalk because that works.
Because it works.
Yeah. Fair enough.
And is it such a bad thing?
No.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. Which I think is probably a good place to end this particular episode.
Oh, body
since we've now solved the question of the body form advert from the, I want to say, early 90s?
For sure,
possibly.
Yes.
Possibly?
Yeah, it's got a kind of 80s.
Yeah.
I want to say spandex and shoulder pads.
Yeah, it's giving kind of Saved by the Bell. It's like,
there you
that's
go.
Kind of, that's yeah. the era. Isn't
for
it?
Sure, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It would have kind of isometric triangles in purple on a green background. Yeah. With kind of motion lines around them, yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So
definitely.
that's where we'll draw it to a close of this episode. There's more of these to come as there...
Lovely.
As there seem to be a never-ending
Despite collection. all of our efforts to get people to just... What is it with you people? Just once we've identified what you're doing, just stop doing it. Can you
it doesn't
stop
seem to be
doing it?
Helping. I mean, admittedly, some of the examples are ones that existed pre, like the Cheers one, for example, that we just talked about.
True. That has not
since we did the episode. It's just I have only come across that since.
Right.
And it occurred to me that's a good example.
But as we've discovered when we've revisited not so long ago the slippery slope fallacy, still people bloody doing it.
Yeah, there are definitely examples that are new since we talked about them and everyone should have stopped by now. But another thing I'll say is that for people who are enjoying this series, and we have had some positive feedback, thank you very much for the feedback.
Mm.
When we do get to the end, which will be several more episodes, been a little bit hyper-focused on noticing new examples of old fallacies,
mm-hmm.
there are more that we've already talked about in this series. Those fantasies I've seen more. There's even more.
No.
Even once we get to... I've got an example for episode 180, which we've literally only just done. I've seen another example. By the time we get to that one, then we'll go back to look at other examples of ones we've talked about during this series that I've found since then.
Yeah.
Because I've kind of... Because doing this has made me, like, just... super observant of them. Anytime anything comes up, I'm like, oh, actually, that's a...
Hang on, I should have talked about that.
That's another example. And people seem to like it. But what I would say is, if you are enjoying this series, that's great. There will be more of them. This isn't all we're doing now for patrons. It has been all we've been doing for a few months now.
Yeah.
Because we ran out of stuff. But we do have on
I don't think we've ran out of stuff. I think we were deliberately avoiding Dinesh D'Souza.
We were. We were absolutely actively avoiding other things that we didn't want to do. But we do have on deck a film that we are going to do next, which is great.
Yes,
we're looking forward to. And also we have a book that will take an extremely long amount of time to talk about that we've considered looking at. So there will be variation. I've started reading
that in earnest.
It's fucking insane, isn't it?
Yeah. In fact, it's very redolent of the Great Awakening.
Very much. The QAnon thing.
It feels like there's
a little bit of crossover.
Yeah.
Even though it predates the QAnon book for a while.
And it's very British. So in a way, it's kind of... comfortable and familiar, but also completely fucking crazy.
So more about that at a later date. And so if you're not enjoying this series, there are other things to look forward to. And if you are, there will be more of this also coming up.
And sounds like there'll be an infinite regressive loop.
I mean, it may be a while before you finish.
Because people have continued, despite all our efforts, to commit fallacies.
They never stop. They're just as bloody worse as each other.
Just as bloody worse. Yeah. But hey, you know, if it works, is it such a bad thing? So anyway, so if you've reached this far, that means you're a very attentive patron on the... there's another channel I watch on YouTube called How Ridiculous, a bunch of Australian guys doing mad things.
Drop heavy things from a big tower.
Drop heavy things from stuff and try to get their latest episode is to try and drop a sheet of paper for 100 metres into a shredder. And at the end of the videos, they always say, you know, if you've stuck on this long, you're a member of the 44 Club. No idea why, can't remember. Yeah, so we get to this is the moment.
I never pay attention to that. I watch their videos sometimes, occasionally. Yeah. I don't think I've ever made it to that.
To the 44 Club.
I watch to find out if they manage to achieve the thing they're trying to achieve, and then instantly skip away to something else.
But that's part of your problem. Yes, but weirdly, you don't apply that. I think that's your rest. Your resting and your R&R behavior, because your meticulousness would not ever allow you to do that on something that you're creating or something that
absolutely not, or anything that I care about.
You're right up to the last completist. Frame. Yeah.
I watch the credits of films. Like, I'll sit in a cinema.
Until
the credits are done.
Exactly. And the lights are up and they're sweeping up the popcorn and they're throwing you out. Yeah.
Who work at the cinema are standing by the side waiting for me to leave.
To leave the aisle.
Everyone else has gone.
I'm the same.
And they're like, we're not allowed to start cleaning up until everyone's gone. They don't say that to me, but it's in their eyes. I see it every time.
And I'm reading, the thousands and thousands of compositors that have worked on a project that all have. Oddly, from Eastern Europe or somewhere, depending
There's
on what project you've looked at. I know. And then sometimes you're rewarded because you're the only one in the cinema to see the post-credit sequence.
Yeah, occasionally. Yeah.
And then you look around and you go,
I just want to see who the gaffer was.
You see? Yeah. 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 Always. It's always about the gaffer. And on, if you're watching a streaming service, they are already lined up the next film for you.
Oh, yeah, that fucking pisses me off.
And you have to leap around and find the remote to go,
and it wants to send me to the next episode before the credits are done.
And you get like 7 seconds.
Yeah, and it makes them tiny so you can't see who played the person in the background of that one scene who you thought, I think I've seen them before in a thing.
You think, hang on a minute. Yeah. I think the recording industry mogul is actually Al Yankovic himself. It turns out he was. And who was it playing Salvador Dali? Oh, my God, it's Emo Phillips. And it's just, absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah, but very frustrating because you've got to find the remote and then you've got to find on the screen where it says watch the credits.
Yeah, because if you press the wrong thing, then the whole screen goes away and you can't get back to that bit without watching all through the
whole
film
movie
again,
you've got
or
spool through it
at
150 speed.
In 10 minute increments.
Exactly. Yeah.
Let us watch the credits.
Yeah. So if you've made it this far, thanks again. And thanks for being a patron. And we hope this is to your liking because it's 2 hours.
And
as is your patronage.
The podcast was me.
Was, yes, absolutely. Using was Gorilla. We're using Gorilla gaffer tape throughout. Yeah. All right. So till the next thing, we'll see you soon. Bye.
Bye.